Do you know how many times I've set the intention that on Sunday, I'm going to get up, I'm going to plan my meals out for the week, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to get everything that I need, I'm going to come home, I'm going to make all my meals for the week. Do you know how many times I've actually been successful in doing that? Not once, folks, okay? Not one single time. But alas, I have found the perfect solution. Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your damn door. You get to pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Maybe one week you're feeling Mediterranean, maybe another week you're feeling a little carb consciousness. I like the sound of that. I most recently made, it was a spinach and strawberry salad with steak. It was damn good. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
I'm not angry. I'm just very enthusiastically expressing my frustration. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shitshow nation. It's been a while since I've done that. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shitshow. I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship. If you're wondering what an adult child is, it is someone who grew up in a dysfunctional family whose unresolved childhood wounds are surfacing and playing out in adulthood and not in a good way. What are the common characteristics of an adult child, you ask? Let me give you a few. People-pleasing, approval-seeking, fear of authority, fear of people, deep fears of abandonment, overdeveloped sense of responsibility, guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves, an inability to say no, stuffed emotions, an addiction to excitement. So basically everyone. Yes, basically everyone. You know, dysfunctional families come in all shapes and sizes, okay? We have blatant forms. We have subtle forms. It can be equally as impactful. There are a lot of people out there saying, you know, my childhood wasn't that bad. I shouldn't be this screwed up. And what I like to say is that it's not so much about what happened to you, but rather what you came to believe about yourself and the world as a result of what happened to you. For somebody who experienced, you know, really horrendous physical abuse versus somebody who just experienced emotional neglect, both of those experiences can result in somebody having the belief that I am inherently flawed or I am unlovable. There is no hierarchy when it comes to dysfunction or when it comes to abuse. So welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. We like to curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. So today, folks, we're diving deeper into conflict. And really what we're looking at today is anger. We are looking at how to process our anger. Because here's the deal, spoiler alert, before we can have healthy conflict resolution, we need to be able to see the conflict accurately. There are so many different things that go into how we perceive the situation. And so processing this anger is all about getting an accurate perception of what the hell is going on so that I can then make a healthy and mature decision as far as how do I want to handle this conflict? Or maybe is this just my shit and there isn't actually a conflict to be resolved? So that is what we are doing today, folks. So let's get the damn show on the road. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. If you would like to get a sense of what this community is like, please check out our Shit Show Saturday episodes where I interview fellow members of the Shit Show, where I also will include portions of our support group meetings so you can get a sense of what this community is like. And boy, is it good. Hop on board this damn ship. This is relational trauma. We heal in safe relationships. This is a place where you can do so, where you can meet people who know exactly how you feel. Feel seen, heard, and understood like never before. Damn the Join Shit Show. Yes, you know who I'm talking to. See the link in the show notes to join. Take that little thumb right now or that index finger and damn the join. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. So in order for us to have healthy conflict resolution, we have to be able to see the conflict accurately. And in order for us to be able to see this for what it really is, we have to be able to process our anger in a healthy way, which will then allow us to see what's really going on here. What part of this is mine? What part of this is theirs? How much of this is related to my unresolved trauma, my dysfunctional family programming, my past experiences? How much of this is related to the actual situation at hand here? And this is why I say there is so much to learn. There is so much growth that comes from us navigating this conflict and conflict resolution process. And you guys, this is going to be something that we are going to just be working on for for years and years and years. So let's all just cut ourselves some slack here, show both ourselves and others some grace. But again, what I said last week, that one of the key distinctions of a healthy and an unhealthy, or a functional and a dysfunctional relationship, is our ability to repair conflict. And so much of our ability to repair conflict has to do with our relationship with ourselves. And so again, as I like to reiterate, you know, it's not our fault that we have complex trauma. It's not our fault that we grew up in a dysfunctional family and that impacted us. However, we're the only ones that can do anything about healing and getting better. So let's talk about anger and the brain, okay? So as we have discussed many times before, we have the limbic system and we have the prefrontal cortex. So the limbic system is the survival part of the brain. This is the part of the brain that gets triggered and goes into fight-flight mode. This is also the emotional part of the brain. And the concern of the limbic part of the brain is that when it experiences an unpleasant emotion like fear or anger, it wants to have it fixed right away. It is all about immediate gratification and immediate relief. We then have the prefrontal cortex. This is the rational part of the brain. This is the wise, mature adult part of the brain that takes the information, all the sensory information from the limbic system, and makes sense of things, puts things in a clear and cohesive memory, and also allows us to make a wise and mature decision on how to react based off evaluating and assessing all the information that it receives from the limbic system. And so let's take somebody who grows up in a normal and healthy home. Screw those people, right? Screw them. So when they get angry, the limbic system starts reporting all of this information about being angry to the prefrontal cortex, the wise part of the brain. So the limbic system is saying, I'm feeling this, I'm pissed about that, I'm mad about this, blah, 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 blah. And then the prefrontal cortex then takes in those messages, evaluates it, and comes up with a wise and mature way to respond to the situation at hand. So it is the prefrontal cortex, the adult, the mature part of the brain, that trumps the limbic part of the brain. It is just the limbic system is just serving to provide the prefrontal cortex with information. But what happens for a child who grows up in a home that is enduring, is experiencing complex trauma on the reg, well, that's what complex trauma is that our prefrontal cortex does not fully develop because we are constantly getting triggered and going into this fight flight mode, which causes our limbic system to rev up and our prefrontal cortex to rev down. Our prefrontal cortex does not develop in the way that it's supposed to. So what happens when we get mad is that the limbic system trumps the prefrontal cortex. And so we are reacting based off how we are feeling. We are reacting based in that immediate gratification, that immediate relief, which is centered in this childlike reptilian part of the brain, as opposed to the prefrontal cortex being able to step in as the wise adult and help us make, you know, a mature decision. And I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but I have, where I've been in an argument with somebody and I can see the other person turning into a child, like starting to behave in certain ways that are very childlike. And so what I really just want you to understand here is that the two emotions that impact the limbic brain with the greatest intensity, more so than any other emotion, are anger and fear. And it is anger and fear that causes the release of cortisol in the brain, which just amps up this intensity that the limbic system feels. So we're not going to have conflict resolution while we're angry. Can't be done when we're angry. Why? Because when you're angry, and this is not just unique to us adult children, this happens to everybody, but this is particularly poignant for us. You are not seeing things clearly when you're angry. Do you hear me? Your perception is distorted. How many times have you had that happen where, you know, you think you see something so clearly, and the next morning you wake up, once you've cooled down, and you realize, oh, I kind of got that wrong, right? You distort what's happening. You distort what you think is causing the hurt. And you often distort what you think the other person's motives are. I mean, let's be honest. We tend to go to the worst case scenario in those moments of anger. And we tend to think the worst of people in those moments. So it is so important that we learn how to catch ourselves in those moments when we're angry, right? So part of that is being aware of what our triggers are, what are the sensations in your body when you're getting angry, and being able to notice that and bite your tongue and pause and walk away. And when you're biting your tongue, this is saying, and you could even say this, hey, you know what? I'm not in a place right now where I am able to have a healthy conversation about this. I am not in a place right now where I can express how I'm feeling in a calm way. I'm not in a place where I can resolve my anger in a healthy way. I'm not going to be able to see this issue in a right-sized way. I need to cool down. And when it comes to de-escalating, I mean, anything that we use to help us when we're feeling dysregulated, anything will help us when we're to cool down our anger. So for me, exercise really, really helps. I'll do like kickboxing. Any sort of vagus nerve exercise is really helpful too. Screaming into a pillow. I actually did that the other night. So I was thinking about, for me, when was the last time that I got really, really, really angry? I'm not a rager. There's only one time really in my life that I can think of where I really went into a blind rage. Well, there's two. One was I was drunk, and I was not going to tell you that story. I was 18. I think I told that story in the fourth episode of the podcast, when that was when I got kicked out of the party I'll tell the story. So this is, if you haven't heard what kind of a drinker I am here, this is the kind of drinker I am. This is why everybody and their mom and their dad and their dog walker should be glad that I don't drink anymore, okay? So I was going to, I was a senior in high school, and I was dating my boyfriend, John, and we were invited to this birthday party. I was more invited to this birthday party by association by him. So with this group of people, it was his group of friends. I was only allowed to attend the birthday party if I agreed to not drink at all. And that was because I had created quite a big mess, quite a lot of scenes when I would hang out with this group of people. However, due to my great negotiation skills, I was able to negotiate down to beer only. So I ended up drinking a bottle of wine before I went to the party. I thought that this would help, you know, kickstart my buzz, because truly, folks, I really did intend just to only drink beer at the party. And I thought that by drinking this bottle of wine, you know, that would help. But of course, I'm an alcoholic and my intentions don't mean shit when I drink alcohol. So it wasn't long before getting to the party that I got into the liquor. And it wasn't long after that that I was escorted out of the party and driven home by two people that were there. And they dropped me off at home and they didn't give me my car keys, which that's probably a good thing. So what did I do? Well, I called a taxi. This is way before Uber days. This was 2006. September 2006. So as soon as I got home, I called that taxi company, and I had that taxi take me right back to the party. And I don't think I shared this part of the story actually in the fourth episode. So when I got there, so these people, they lived above a diner, like in an apartment above a diner. And so there was this, it was kind of like a roof patio. It was like the roof of the diner. It was kind of like a patio for them. And I saw my boyfriend up there making out with another girl. And I just went into a rage. And so I was trying to like get in the door. I was trying to get up the stairs. And I remember all of these people were holding me back. And you know how they say when you just get put with that adrenaline? It was like I had the strength of like a Olympic bodybuilder, whatever the strongest man would be. All these people were like holding me back, and I'm like getting up the top of the stairs, and I finally get my boyfriend, I rip his shirt, I remember, and then they pushed me down the stairs and they pushed me out of the apartment. And then that's when the cops arrived, because the cops had been called because of the noise that I had been causing when I re-arrived at the party and saw my boyfriend making out with somebody else. So then we all got arrested for underage drinking. And yes, I was that girl. Aren't you bummed that you didn't have a chance to party with me? Here is the other time that I can remember getting that mad. And this was in, I want to say it's 2019, because it was post entering adult child recovery, but definitely pre-pandemic. So I was home in Florida for Christmas. It was New Year's Eve, and I was getting ready to go over to a friend's house for a party. And I heard the doorbell ring, and then I went out for my room and I saw my mom was standing there in the kitchen. I was like, are you going to go get the door? Or are you expecting someone? And I just remember I don't remember what she said, but it was a very weird answer. And then I went back into my room, but then I just started to feel a little fishy about it. So I went back out and I could see that my mom was coming back in the front door, and I could see that she had a bottle of wine in a paper bag. And I just went nuts. Like, I went into this blind rage and I went over to her and I was trying to wrestle the bottle of wine out of her hands. I remember I was grabbing her by her shoulders. I'm several inches taller than her. And I was grabbing her by her shoulders, and I was like inches from her face. And I was screaming at her from the top of my lungs. I have no idea what I was saying, but I was screaming like in a way that I had never screamed before. And I finally came to, maybe after, I don't know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? What the fuck am I doing? And I remember I felt so ashamed. And I just gave her the bottle of wine back, and I just went into my room. And, you know, when I shared last week about sitting on the steps as a little girl and listening to my parents fight, you know, when my dad was out of town when I was a kid, I would treat my mom the same way that he would treat my mom related to her drinking when he was in town. So when he was gone, I would search the house for her booze. And then I would yell at her just like he would yell at her. And it was so interesting how in this moment, me yelling at her, my dad, I don't know where he was at this point in time when this incident happened, but he wasn't there. And then the other thing too I remember is that I didn't want to leave to go to my party until my dad got home, which is also like, you know, my sleepover thing, in case you didn't know or you haven't heard, in my second episode, I share about how I was the girl that would always, quote unquote, get sick right before it was time to go to bed. And I know, although it wasn't conscious, I do know that a large part of that probably had to do with the fact that I was wanting to be home to like protect my mom. And so there was this part of me, and I caught it, that didn't want to go to the party until he got home. But I ended up, you know, kind of talking myself off the ledge and reminding myself that it was not my responsibility, just like it wasn't my responsibility when I was a little girl. It wasn't my responsibility to stay home with her then. So that really is the only time that I've really just gone nuts. I'm not a super angry person. You know, this is something that we'll talk about in a little bit, about how, well, we can just talk about it now, that anger is often a secondary emotion, meaning that, you know, a lot of the times we will go to feeling anger instead of another emotion because it is more comfortable for us to feel anger. So, for example, anger might be more comfortable for us to feel than feeling hurt, or anger might be more comfortable for us to feel than feeling embarrassed or guilty. And so I think that a lot of the times, and that's part of the process of processing our anger that we're going to talk about, is about getting down to like, what is the actual real feeling that we have going on here? But I think for me, typically I go to that feeling of hurt as opposed to feeling anger. And so when I think about situations as of recently where I have felt anger, it's honestly a lot of the times it's related to where I feel like people are avoiding taking accountability for their actions. That is really triggering for me. People not being able to have difficult conversations, people not being able to have conflict resolution. There's like an injustice there. And, you know, I was going to go into all of the various triggers that are most common for us adult children, but Tim Fletcher has a really amazing video on triggers. And the one thing that he talks about, and I'll include a link to that video in the show notes, but one of the big things he talks about in there, and I so resonate with this, is just the feeling of injustice and how that is such a big trigger for us that grew up in dysfunctional families where there was never any justice for anything, right? For the mistreatment, for the abuse, for, you know, all the fighting, everything. There was never any accountability. There was never any justice. There was never any apologies. I'm sorry. There was never any change of action. You know, many of us were scapegoats where we're getting everything dumped on us. And so we get super triggered when we feel like there's an injustice to us, or we feel like there's an injustice of other people. And also too, the problem with this though, is that this can cause us to stay in a place of anger and not want to forgive because of that, the justice thing, like that other person deserves to pay. Like I've gone my whole life without people paying, and I want them to pay. I want them to pay for it. So something to keep in mind there. But those are the situations that are most triggering for me. But what's important here is that we all need to understand what are our triggers, what are our anger patterns, what are the sensations in our body that we feel, what are the emotions that we feel, because we need to be able to hopefully catch ourselves before we go haywire, right? Because the other thing with anger is that it causes us to be impulsive. So when you are angry, you are in often the greatest danger of doing something rash, dumb, saying something that you don't mean, doing something that you didn't mean to do. And then it's, you know, you're cleaning up that mess. So the hope is that through time, and this takes a lot of time and a lot of practice, that we can start to get an understanding of what are the things that trigger our anger, what are the sensations that we're feeling in our body, so that hopefully we can catch ourselves, so that when we have conflict resolution, we're resolving conflict that is like juicy and meaty and helping us to grow and, you know, develop a closer, more intimate relationship, as opposed to having to resolve conflict that is us just saying stupid shit when we're super angry. The other thing that I want to note here is that we, in addition to the anger that shows up when we get triggered, we also have all of this unresolved anger that we have to deal with, that we come in with when we start this adult child recovery. So we talk about how a large part of this process is about resolving these emotions, feeling these emotions that have been stuffed deep down inside of us for so, so long. And there is a lot of anger that is included with that. We have, you know, unresolved losses, grief. There's a lot of anger there. Shame, ton of anger. Guilt, ton of anger. Unresolved resentments, ton of anger. And so the hope is that as we're working through these in our recovery and healing process, that anger that lives within us is going to simmer down, and that will help us when we have conflict and we have conflict resolution, because we have less of that just kind of stagnant, unresolved anger that is just kind of permeating within. So let's get on to the good stuff, okay? Let's get on to that good. And let's talk about processing our anger. And from there, we can decide, okay, this is my shit. I don't really need to say anything to the other person. Or this is some of my shit and some of their shit. And I'm not going to say anything because this person actually isn't capable of having healthy conflict resolution, which we'll talk about. Or this is my shit and their shit, and this is somebody that I'm going to try to have conflict resolution with. And how am I going to proceed in doing so? Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? So Katherine Heigl, you know her from Grey's Anatomy, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says that she's seen more issues with dog joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. So what she's discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. But fortunately, she has found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformation in their health. And she has made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, y'all know I'm a cat lady. Y'all know that Kiki is the queen of the shit show here. But I watched this video and there's actually some things that I can apply to her health. So hopefully she'll live another 15 years or so. So go to badlandsfood.com/adultchild and watch Katherine's video. Again, that is badlandsfood.com/adultchild. Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my young younger shitshow women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today. All right, my shit show ladies, let me tell you about how I can make getting dressed so much easier for you. Armoire is a clothing rental membership where you get to build your perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you gotta do is take a 5-minute style quiz and then select from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new to you styles. So I love this because I'm on video quite often on interviews and social media content, and I don't want people to be like, is that the only shirt that this girl owns? I also would not consider myself in the know of what's hot and what's not. But with Armoire, I get to pretend like I'm a fashionista. So this is perfect for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for any women who just don't feel like going to the store. Now, right now, you shit show ladies can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. So that is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/adultchild. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/adultchild to get 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear ever again. So the point of processing our anger, and I touched upon this earlier about how we do not see things clearly when we are angry. Our perception is distorted. And so the goal of processing our anger here is that in order for me to be able to process this, I have to be able to see the situation accurately. Now, that can be a challenge for some people, especially if we are earlier in our recovery. It's hard to trust our perceptions. And I think that this is important at any point in time that of how long you've been in recovery. I think it's really important that you find somebody who's got the wisdom, who knows you, who can help you process the situation accurately, and someone who's going to be honest with you. Don't want to be calling any light gassers. So this is a term that I just recently learned. So the opposite of gaslighting, but a light gasser is basically when someone agrees with you or validates your false beliefs or misconceptions in order to be supportive. So basically you call them about a conflict and they either, let's say that you took the way that somebody said something to you and you took it completely the wrong way and it's pretty obvious, but this other person agrees with you, like, oh yeah, they totally meant it that way. Or they disregard the fact that you messed up pretty big too, that you had a part in it too. Oh no, it's totally fine what you did. We don't want that. We don't want that. We do want people to, you know, understand us, validate our feelings, validate feelings all day long, folks. But we don't want to be validating people's misconceptions or false beliefs related to certain circumstances. So this actually might be something that's important to preface when you call somebody and you're wanting their perspective on a conflict, on a situation that you have with somebody. Say to them, you know, I'd really like for you to give me your honest feedback. Am I seeing this for what it is? You want somebody that is going to give it to you straight. So I would say the most important thing that we first need to process or assess is, what am I feeling right now? What am I feeling? What is the emotion? So like I said before, anger is often a secondary emotion. So I might be feeling angry right now, but is this feeling covering another feeling up? And so this is another part of this adult child shit that can make processing our anger and processing these situations more challenging, is that we're often not the most emotionally literate when we first start doing this stuff. So Tion Dayton talks about this, like this is her message hardcore is emotional literacy. So basically, You know, the ability to convert feelings into words, to decode our inner world through the use of words. It is the ability to talk out rather than act out our feelings. And as we know, one of the laundry list traits is we have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and whatever. Denial is in the parentheses at the end of the thing because it hurts too much, something like that. So we're not necessarily the best at decoding our emotions. So this is something that we have to learn how to do. So the first step is, you know, is to feel your feelings, right? That's the first thing, sitting with them, allowing you to make sense of what is happening in your inner world. And then from there, hopefully we can label the specific feeling that we're feeling. Some other questions to ask yourself as you're processing your anger. So is this an unrealistic expectation I had? Like perhaps you expect your partner to remember every important date and plan something special for everyone. However, your partner is not particularly good at remembering dates and doesn't place as much emphasis on having these occasions. So that might be an unrealistic expectation that you might have. Or perhaps you expect a friend to always be available whenever they need to talk without considering their schedule or their personal boundaries. Or this would be a great one, actually. Let's say you're trying to have conflict resolution with an alcoholic parent or a narcissistic parent, and you are pissed off that the conversation didn't go as planned. Unrealistic expectation. Is this perhaps a boundary issue that is causing me to get angry? Is somebody not respecting my boundaries, my privacy? Has somebody just assumed that they could, you know, walk into my life without being asked or give me advice or give me their opinion without being advised? And that's why I'm angry. Here's a big one. Miscommunication. Is this anger due to a misunderstanding or a miscommunication? This is huge, y'all. And what I hope that we can all take away from this episode is let's normalize clarifying miscommunications. Let's fucking ask, folks. Let's ask. So I want to share a story with y'all. And I actually shared this story today in the Shit Show support group. So, and this actually will encompass many things. So this was during the pandemic. I went and I lived in Austin for a couple months. I went and got an Airbnb there. And I went with a guy friend of mine from San Francisco that I knew from AA. He was gay. We were not in a relationship. We were just friends. And before we went, I said to him, because I had never really lived with anybody before, I said, we need to make sure that we don't let things pile up. If we have resentments, if we have misunderstandings or whatever, we need to make sure that we bring this stuff up to each other right away so we don't let things fester and grow. That is huge. So it was Christmas time, right? And I started to feel like I was living with a 16-year-old boy, okay? Anytime I tried to talk to him, I would get like a And so I thought to myself, you know what? It's Christmas time. It's COVID. He's probably just in a weird space. Now, this was huge for me, folks. This was huge for me because in the past, I would automatically assume that I had done something wrong, that he was mad at me for some reason. And then I would start acting in a way that would be in line with that. And we're going to talk about this in a little bit. We're going to talk about transference and we're going to talk about projective identification. But so I would typically act in accordance with that belief. But by this point, I had had enough experience of thinking that it's me that's the problem. And it just turns out that that person's just having a bad day, or that person has something going on that has absolutely nothing to do with me. I'm like, you know what? He's probably got his own shit going on. Plus, folks, I assumed that if I had done something wrong, that he would have told me, because we had had experiences in our friendship where I had said things that had hurt his feelings and he had expressed that to me. Now, here's what I know about myself, okay? And I think we all might kind of know this, but I'm sarcastic. I like to joke around. I tease myself more than I tease anybody else. But there are occasions where I can say something and it can hurt somebody's feelings. It is never, ever, ever my intention to hurt somebody's feelings. Okay, when I'm joking around, it's coming from a place of love. There's this guy named Bard. He's in AA in Jacksonville. And he also always used to say, if Andrea is not giving you a hard time, that's not a good sign for you. So when I'm teasing people, it means that I love you. But I assumed that he would have told me if I'd said something to him because he had brought things up to me in the past. So it's like a week later and I'm still living with this damn 16-year-old boy. It's New Year's Eve. And I went to the store and I got all of this amazing food and I was just so excited to eat and hang out. And he was not so jazzed to be with me. And so this is another thing that I've learned to do. Is now, it's been a week, okay? So I went up to him and I said, hey, can we talk? And I said, I want to know, is there something that I have done that hurt your feelings? Because I feel like for the past week, whenever I try to talk to you, it seems like I'm annoying you. And at first he was trying to like completely avoid having a conversation at all. And then I pushed a little bit and then he just launched into me with all of this shit that he had been holding on to for a couple months. And the two first things were things that I had said to him that he had misinterpreted and hurt his feelings. Now, here's the deal. His feelings are absolutely valid, 100%. But his interpretation of what I said and what I meant, was completely invalid, okay? And had he addressed that when I said it at the time, and I would have told him, you know, that this was not what I meant. So basically, he launches into me and all these things that I did. And then he goes, oh, God. So then he goes, it was like I don't know what it was, like 2 weeks before that, like he had left the microwave open. And I went into the kitchen and I closed the microwave, but I slammed it shut. I slammed it pretty loud. I didn't mean to do that. And then he came in and I was like, oh, sorry. I was like, you left the microwave open. And then I felt so bad that I had like slammed it shut like that. So then a couple minutes later, I go up to him and I'm like, I'm really sorry. I did not mean to slam it like shut like that. I'm really sorry. And he's like, it's fine. It's fine. And so then 5 minutes later, again, I go up to him. I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry. Like, I did not mean to do that because I'm not a snapper. And he's like, no, it's totally fine. So then when we're having this damn conversation, he goes, and then you slammed the microwave. And I go, I apologized to you right after I did it. He goes, I don't care. You still did it. And so he just was launching into me and I was trying to have resolution with him, right? And he was having none of it because he's angry. And because what did I say earlier? We assume the worst when we're angry. And so he doesn't want to hear that, like, that's not what I meant. He thinks I'm an evil fucking bitch at this point, okay? And I just started hysterically crying. I was sobbing. And I ended up going and to this girl's house and hanging out with her. But here's the deal with him, okay? He is an avoider. He's an avoider. This is something that I know about him. I knew this because one of the reasons is because, so back at his apartment in San Francisco, he had broke one of his roommate's dinner plates. It was a cheap Target dinner plate. That plate had been hidden in his room for months. That plate had been hidden in his room for months because that's how much of a conflict avoider he was. But the way that he lashed out at me was not okay, you know, and his feelings were valid, but here's where we're talking about, like, what's my part and what's not my part. What's not my part is the fact that he held on to all of this shit and created a story in his head, because that's what we do too. When we hold on to things and we don't say things to other people, we are on guard for any little thing that they do that annoys us that we can interpret in a certain way. So that skewed his perception of everything that I was doing over those months that he was holding on to things. And so that's not my part. That's not my part. And it's also not my part that he was like, basically the way that I felt was that if he wanted to resolve this, then he needed to be the person to come to me and start the conversation. And he never did. We lived together for the next 3 weeks. I felt fine. It was a little uncomfortable at first, but you know, I wasn't going to try to have a conversation with him and be shot down. And so we lived together for the next, 3 weeks, and we just didn't really talk to each other. And I left. He stayed in Austin for another month. I went and lived in Phoenix for a month. I never heard from that mofo ever again. Okay? So, miscommunication and misunderstanding. This happens all of the time. We mishear things. We misinterpret things. This happens in text messages all the time. This just happened to me recently in text message where, and I knew this, and this is also a sign of my growth, where I took something that someone said to be dismissive or as if they did not want to spend any time with me. But I knew that as of late that I had a couple things trigger me, that I had had some wounds, some incidences that were making me more sensitive, that if it wasn't for those other situations, I wouldn't be interpreting this text in that light. And so that's another thing that we need to consider, is that what has our headspace been lately? You know, what kind of mood have we been feeling? Have we been taking care of ourselves spiritually, emotionally, mentally, physically? Because when we are tired, when we are exhausted, when we are super stressed, when we are overwhelmed, when we are not spiritually fit, this is an opportunity where we are going to misinterpret something, have miscommunication. So again, let's normalize clarifying the miscommunication. If somebody says something to you that hurts your feeling, and this is somebody that typically wouldn't say that to you, this is a friend, this is a loved one, let's just ask, folks. Can we please just ask? Okay, so now let's talk about some things related to how do we know if this is something deeper that is getting triggered within me. And as I said before, it most likely is. When we get triggered, it usually has some sort of deeper connection. So I want to talk to you about transference, and I want to talk about projective identification. So when anger from the past gets triggered and layered onto a circumstance in our presence, this is what we call transference, okay? This is old anger that is being transferred or displaced onto a new situation. The problem with this, though, is that we might be entirely unaware that our intense reaction to this circumstance is actually being fueled by the pain that we are still carrying from the past. So what's a good sign of this? If it's hysterical, it's historical, right? When our reactions are out of proportion to the given situation at hand, what we need to understand is that when our emotional pain remains unresolved, it lies in wait, right? Often unconscious of its power, of its content, until something, some stimulus in the here and now triggers it, and it rises to the surface. And we might react to a perceived threat with a response that is far greater than the situation merits. So transference can be really confusing to untangle, as yesterday's pain, yesterday's anger gets incorporated into today's issues, and then it becomes really, really difficult to separate what is what, right? And this is particularly gnarly when it comes to intimate relationships. So here's an example of what this would look like. So let's say that you grew up in a home where your father frequently dismissed your feelings and became angry with you whenever you tried to express yourself. So as a result of this, you learn to suppress your anger, and you develop this deep-seated resentment towards your dad for not allowing you to express yourself. So now, as an adult, you're in a relationship, and you unconsciously transfer these unresolved feelings of anger and resentment that are related to your dad onto your partner. So whenever your partner disagrees with you or offers constructive criticism, you instantly feel a surge of intense anger and frustration, as if you are being unfairly silenced or invalidated. And even if your partner is calm and supportive in the conversation, you interpret their comments through the lens of your past, reacting to them as if they are trying to control you or dismiss you, just like your dad did. So then you might respond with defensive anger, lashing out, or shutting down emotionally without recognizing that your reaction is more about the unresolved anger that you hold towards your dad rather than your partner's current behavior. So now let's talk about another way that our pain from the past can be projected onto our present. So that is through projective identification. So this is when we project qualities, either good or bad, onto another person that matches up with what we have already experienced. Then we then behave in a way that elicits responses in that person that matches up with our existing experiences, our existing templates. So in other words, we draw out of them the very behaviors that we often fear most. Our minds tend to perceive selectively. We give less attention to the qualities that do not match up with our past experiences, while giving more attention to those that do match up with that. So we look for the qualities of rejection or of abandonment that match up with what we may have known and what we expect or even elicit from the people that we are relating to, convinced that that is all there is to see there. In other words, we elicit what we assume is there. We behave according to our past experiences. So here is an example of that, okay? So let's say you grew up in a home where your parent was highly critical of you and often expressed anger in passive-aggressive ways, like giving you the silent treatment or, you know, making sarcastic comments. And so we learned to suppress our anger and resentment, fearing that if we express it directly, that that would just lead to more criticism or emotional withdrawal. And so as a result, in a romantic relationship that we find ourselves in adulthood, we carry this unresolved anger from our childhood experiences, but we're not fully aware of it. And because of these past experiences, we unconsciously project this repressed anger onto our partner. We believe that our partner is secretly angry with us or harbors resentment, even when there is no clear evidence of this. To test this belief, we might behave in, you know, subtly provocative ways, like making snide remarks or, you know, being unreasonably critical or bringing up, you know, past grievances, expecting them to react with frustration or anger. And so then when our partner eventually becomes irritated or defensive in response to, it seems to confirm what we believed all along, that the anger was there all along. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Our unresolved anger and behaviors drives to elicit the very response that we fear and expect from our partner, also reinforcing our beliefs that others are always angry or critical, instead of recognizing that our actions are actually what contributed to our partner's irritation, not realizing that we are actually the one that drew the anger out of them. These are a bunch of things to keep in mind when we're processing our anger, when we're processing conflict. And honestly, as we go deeper in our work, this stuff becomes easier to sort out. We have patterns, we have things, themes, we have the things that bother us and the things that frequently get triggered within us. Like I said, for me, It's usually related to feelings of abandonment, honestly, is typically when I get triggered, feelings of abandonment, whether that's perceived or real, but that is typically the stuff that really gets me going. But what helps is with that self-awareness is that I know when I'm in a more sensitive place, like I said before, and then I am more likely to perceive people's actions, words, whatever, in a way that I typically, if I was in a more centered place, I wouldn't. So a few closing comments when it comes to processing our anger. You know, sometimes we're going to be able to figure it out right away. Sometimes it might take a few days for us to figure it out. The other thing too that we need to be mindful of is that our anger, when we go into this processing, we might get re-escalated. We might go back into that flight-fight mode, that anger might get triggered within us, where again, we're not in a position to where we can assess things accurately. So we might need to go through this processing process several times of de-escalating over and over again when we find that when we start to process it, we start thinking about the other thing that they said, or they did this, or they did that. And so we need to be able to gain that awareness again of when we start going back into that fight flight mode, when we start going into that limbic system, because we're not going to be able to have healthy processing then. And so, as I said, the purpose of processing this anger is that hopefully we've gotten to a place where we figured out that either I'm going to let this go, like this is my stuff that's getting triggered. This isn't the other person's issue. This is my stuff that I need to resolve. We might realize that this is my stuff that's getting triggered, and I actually need to make an apology to this other person because I realize that I reacted in a way that was in response to my unresolved stuff getting triggered. Or we may get to a place where we realize that the other person is at fault, and we do need to confront them, or we might get to a place where we realize we do need to confront this other person, but they're not in they're not in a position, this isn't a person that we can have healthy conflict with. Conflict resolution is only possible if both people are willing to have conflict resolution. If both people are willing to look at their stuff, both people are willing to process, both people want to see the situation accurately, both people are humble, both people are coming in with the attitude of, as I said before, I'm willing to learn from this, I'm willing to grow, I'm willing to say sorry if it's necessary, if it's warranted, I'm willing to be open to the fact that I might be having a miscommunication or a misunderstanding, I'm willing to be open to the fact that perhaps I'm not seeing this accurately. Both people have to be willing to do this. Both people have to have that humility. And when it comes to a lot of our dysfunctional family members, this isn't possible. And so this is where we shift into either doing nothing, right? Letting this person go, or doing conflict management by setting boundaries, which I have to do all the damn time with my parents. So here's what we're going to do. I've talked enough for today. So we'll dive into specific conflict resolution stuff, including conflict management stuff when it comes to toxic dealing with conflict, when it comes to toxic people. But we'll do that in a few weeks. I've got some great interviews coming up for you. Most specifically, her name is Carrie McAvoy. She's a retired therapist. She is an author. She found herself married to a narcissist after her husband of 30 years tragically passed away, was diagnosed with cancer and died 5 months later, and found herself in quite a shitty narcissistic relationship after also being a therapist for decades. So such a good episode. Lots free there. Love you all. See you soon. Let it all go.